All right, Joe, we'll say good morning. Good morning. Another beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Yud Zayin. And we are going to pick up Emir Tzashem on 17. Today's daf is 17. We're going to pick up Emir Tzashem on Tzayin on the days 16b. Two lines up from the bottom. I want to begin by thanking our sponsors for today. To thank our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Adar, the Learner Mishpacha, for dedicating all of the Shiurim and Drashos this month in memory of Mrs. Dina Lerner Gerber, Dina Bas Yehuda Leib. To thank our sponsors for the week of learning, Paul and Kathy Pollack, for dedicating all of the Shiurim this week in memory of Paul's grandparents, Zachariah Ben Zachariah and Dina Bas Pesach. And to thank Jack Bennett, who dedicated the week of learning this week in memory of Captain Duror Barshai, who served and died as deputy commander in the 51st Battalion of the Golani Brigade. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the neshamas will have an aliyah, the families a nechama, and it is incredible, zuchus, to be able to, really, you know, I was thinking about this yesterday, that, you know, we learn in memory of these people every day, and what it means to be part of a nation where, even though these are people, aside from the mishpachas, many of us did not know a lot of these people we learn for each and every day. Yet what an incredible zechus it is, and what an incredible form of achdus it is when we go ahead and we're so connected to one another that even when one of us is no longer here, the rest of us continue to propel and to lift up their neshama. So an incredible zechus, and the merit of Hashem, the merit of our learning, all of the neshama should have an aliyah, and the families in nechama. And obviously with that, let us begin. So we are picking up, remember, still in the sugya of the 18 enactments of the Yodchas Takanas. So Moses said, therefore, the Gemara continues on the bottom of Tezayin Amud Beis. V'idach mai. So what are some of the other enactments that were part of the 18 that were legislated in the attic, right, in the Aliyah of Hananya ben Chizkiah ben Gar? And so it says, V'idach mahi. So it's a very interesting halacha. So we learned in the Mishnah that any movable objects have the ability to conduct tumah as long as they have the thickness of an ox goad. So take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Interesting aloha. If you have, we know that there's a concept of tumas meis. Not only is there a concept of tumas meis, come in contact with a corpse, you become tamei. Not only that, but halacha lameisa, there's a concept of ohel. What ohel says is that if you are under the same roof with a corpse, so ultimately, again, that roof has the ability to disperse the tumah to anything underneath the same roof. The Gemara now is suggesting that one of the chidushim that they legislated as part of the 18 enactments is that if you have a utensil, a kli, that is on top of a corpse, right? So let's say, well, so you have a kli that's on top of the corpse, and then the kli is a long kli, and then somewhere on the other side of the kli, right? In other words, along the length of the kli, there are other utensils underneath that kli. So the kli, the utensil, essentially acts as an ohel, acts as a roof, acts as a tent to conduct the tumah from one area underneath the kli to infect, we'll call the kalim, underneath the other side of the kli. So essentially a utensil has the ability to act as an ohel, to conduct tumah from the corpse ultimately to the kalim. The common denominator between the corpse and the kalim is that they are both underneath the same kli. However, that only occurs if the kli has the thickness of an ox goad. That will say, now understand that the thickness of an ox goad is a third of a tefach. Now, point out something very interesting to you. What's happening over here is as follows. Under normal circumstances, in order for something to be an ohel, it has to have the thickness of at least a tefach. That's the second Rashi, last Rashi, but Ovi Mardeya. Rashi says, "Afilu in b'hen poseach tefach elakovi hamardeya." So we'll say, interestingly enough, normally an ohel must be at least a tefach. What they legislated apparently was that even if you have something that is only a third of a tefach, then ultimately, again, that is going to conduct tumah as well. And I will say, now, something important that's unfolding over here is as follows. As Rashi points out, the axe goad itself only has the thickness of a third of a tefach. Its circumference is a full tefach. So apparently, this takana was legislated because it was felt that people may get confused between circumference and width. So therefore, again, I will say, just to understand, mid-oraisa, the concept of an ohel only applies to something that is a tefach. Apparently, what they legislated is that even if something is only a third of a tefach, it has the ability to act as an ohel and to conduct a tent, a roof, and to conduct tumah as well. That's the chiddush over here. Why a third of a tumah? So this comes from the ox goad, because the ox goad is something that has the thickness of a third of a tefach, but it actually has the circumference of a tefach. So the Gemara goes on. So we'll say very strong wording. He says, literally again, let my children be cut off. Shazu halacha mikupeches. Because this is a cut off halacha. So Rabbi Tarfon apparently did not like this interpretation, and he felt that it was profoundly and fundamentally wrong. He thought it was wrong, and he expressed that wrongness in a very dramatic way, saying, let my children be cut off, chas v'shalom, because this is a cut-off teaching. This teaching makes no sense. Sheshama ha-shomei v'tah, because whoever heard the halacha as it was expressed, Rashi points out, kishenishala ha-she'ila ayidei ma'ise beis ha-medrash, v'shama she'timuha v'tah, so apparently, Rabbi Tarfon felt that when this was discussed in the Beis Medrash, the person who heard the conversation did not understand what he was hearing, and therefore recorded the halacha in an erroneous way. What does this mean? So watch this. So the Gemara says, because what was the case? Ha'ikar over umardia al ksefo. Because we'll say when this came up in the Beis Medrash, they discussed the following situation. The farmer is walking, and his ox goad is on his shoulder. So you have to imagine the scene. So he's carrying the ox goad on his shoulder. So imagine the ox goad extends out behind him. So what happens? As he's walking, so the ox goad passes over a grave. So now what happens? Timu oso mishum kelim ha-ma'ahilim al hames. So I will say, what they did was, they imposed tumah on the farmer. But Rabbi said, but this is very important. They did not make the farmer like Avi Avos HaTumah, but rather, I'll say it and then I'll explain it, but rather they just ultimately made him tame like a utensil which hovers over a grave. Or as Rabbi said, suggests understand Hilchos Tumah for just a moment. In general, in a classic case of Tumas Ohel, let's say Chas V'Shalom, Reuven's in a house and Shimon dies. So Reuven's underneath the same roof as Shimon. So what's the halacha? Reuven becomes tamei. Then not only does Reuven become tamei, but Reuven becomes an avatoma, which means that he requires a 7-day purification process. He requires, you know, the sprinkling with the waters of the para aduma. That's one form of tumah. Another form of tumah is that halacha lemaisa, if you have a kli, a utensil, which hovers over a grave, and someone else is touching that same kli, so that kli could convey tumah to the individual, but not a 7-day tumah, but rather a lightened form, a 1-day tumah. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says over here, Sheshama Hashomea, Kishin Ishla Sheilai De Maisa Beis HaMedrash, when this question came up in the Beis Medrash, Sheshama Shatimuo. So we'll say, so what happened? The person who was recording the conversation heard in the Beis Medrash that they were metame the individual, but he made a mistake. He thought ultimately they were metame the individual for 7 days. But in fact, ultimately, again, they were only metame the individual for 1 day. Why? Because again, the ox goad is something that is a kli. And when a person comes in contact with a kli, with a utensil that is hovering over the mace, it only conveys to him 1 day tumah. So therefore, Moshe Rabbi Tarfon was very upset because Rabbi Tarfon felt they totally misinterpreted the halacha. Amar Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva comes along. Ani atakin shudirei chacham kayom. Rabbi Akiva says, I'm stepping in over here. I'm stepping in and I will explain exactly what is being meant over here. Literally, I will fix this in order that the words of the sages will be upheld. How so? Shiyu kol hamataltlin mevina satuma ala adam, shenose osan, ba'obe mardea. So we'll say, so what Chazal legislated was as follows, that halacha l'maisa, when a person goes ahead and is carrying a utensil that has the width of an ox goad, which is at least one third of a tefach, that carrying that utensil, so we'll say, remember, the case is where the utensil is hovering over a grave, and I'm holding the other piece of that utensil. So Rabbi Akiva says, Chazal instituted that halacha l'maisa, that utensil has the ability to convey tuma to the individual. For the individual who's holding it. B'choshein, v'al shar adam v'kelim b'posiach tefach, and for other people, I'm sorry, v'al asman b'choshein, so we'll say, so Rabbi Akiva gives a three-part halacha. Step number one, if you're holding a utensil, and the utensil has the thickness of the ox goad, i.e. one third of a tefach. So the halacha is that ultimately, again, if it has a third of a tefach, the utensil conveys tuma to the person who is holding it. That's number one. Number two, va'al asman b'chol shehin. A utensil of any size that hovers over a grave contracts tuma. That's halacha number two. Halacha number three, va'al shar adam v'kelim b'poseach tefach. But in order to go ahead and convey tuma to other people or to other utensils, the utensil which is hovering over the grave must have at least the size of a tefach. So Rabbi Akiva suggests to review this. So if we bring this all together, Rabbi Akiva says, in fact, this is a three-part rabbinic legislation. Halacha l'maisa, if I am holding a utensil and one part of the utensil is hovering over a grave, so the halacha is as follows. If the utensil is at least one third of a tefach thick, it conveys tuma to me, the carrier. The utensil itself becomes tame, no matter what the shear is. The utensil itself that's hovering over the grave becomes tame no matter what. And in order for that utensil to convey tuma to other people, meaning not the carrier, to other people, right, and to other utensils, the utensil which is hovering over the grave must have at least the thickness of a tefach. Good. Avam Rabbi Yanai u'mardeh sha'amru, this mardeh that we're talking about, ein ba'avyav tefach, v'yesh be'kevo tefach. So we'll say, I spoiled this for you a little bit before because I felt it was necessary to disclose this information earlier. Rabbi Yanai says, by the way, this mardeh, the reason why we're a little bit hung up on the ox goad is because, again, it does not have the thickness of a tefach, but it has the circumference of a tefach. The gozru al hekefo mishum avyo. And ultimately, again, they were gozer. They were gozer on the circumference, or they were gozer on the thickness because of the circumference. The idea that Rabbi Yanai says, why are we focusing on this ox goad? Because the ox goad is this interesting utensil where the circumference does have the requisite shear, but the thickness does not. And out of a concern that people will get confused between the shiurim of thickness and circumference, therefore, again, part of the 18 enactments was to legislate that even this a utensil that only has the thickness of one third of a tefach has the ability to convey tuma to the person who is holding it while the other part of the utensil is hovering over the grave. So therefore, again, that's the end of that particular halacha. So I just want to point out, Rabbi Tarfon is of the opinion that this whole thing is not one of the 18 enactments. Remember, again, he holds that this whole thing is just one big colossal mistake. That's Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Akiva and others understand, no, this is part of one of the 18 enactments. And again, I will say one more time, according to Rabbi Akiva, what is the enactment? The enactment is as follows, that if I am holding a utensil that has a thickness of at least, I'm holding a utensil, I'm holding one part of it, the other part of it is hovering over a grave. What's my status? It depends. If the utensil has at least a third of a tefach, then halacha l'maisa, it conveys tuma to me, the carrier. In order for that kli to convey tuma to other people, not the carrier, and ultimately to other utensils, it must be at least a tefach. And for the kli itself to contract tuma, any amount allows the kli itself to contract tuma. So that's the enactment according to Rabbi Akiva. I Ulrabi Tarfon the Amar Ekbach as Banai, Shalachazumi Kupekas, Basudhu. So we'll say Rabbi Tarfon, remember Rabbi Tarfon had some pretty strong words that he felt that this enactment was wrong. So according to Rabbi Tarfon, who holds that this enactment was wrong. So Halacha Lamaisa, what does he do ultimately again? Sorry, what does he do? Meaning, if he's missing this, that means he has to go ahead and replace it with something else. So what is he replacing it with? Rabbi Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Af Benos Kusim Nidos Marisasen Bo Bayom Gazru. According to Rabbi Tarfon, they went ahead and they instituted the halachos of Benos Kusim. We mentioned this yesterday already, that Benos Kusim are considered to be Nidos already again from the cradle. Ubi Idach Sfirlik Rabbi Meir. And I will say, in the other case that we saw yesterday about the utensils that are left underneath the pipe, the mikvah pipe, he holds the Rabbi Meir, that's one of the 18 enactments as well. Good. So the Idach, I will say, what's another case that's included in the 18 enactments? So let's remember again, the reason why this sugya is a little bit confusing is because the Mishnah tells us that there are 18 enactments. What doesn't the Mishnah tell us? What the 18 enactments were. A little detail, right? So we're told there are 18. We're just not told exactly what they were. So we're trying to reconstruct this list. So v'idach, habotzer legat. So we'll say, watch this. Person harvests grapes for the wine press. So we'll say, so now I picked grapes and I'm putting them together for the wine press. What's that? Shammai Omer Hochsher. Shammai says that ultimately, again, that we'll say, now the general assumption is that halacha lemaisa, when you harvest grapes, there is some liquid that oozes from those grapes, just from the force of harvesting it. So understand that halacha lemaisa, something, a food item or any object, I will call it a food item, could only be makabel tuma if halacha lemaisa it has come in contact with a liquid. So now the interesting question that we're dealing with over here is that a person is harvesting the grapes. And as I'm harvesting them, I squeeze them a little bit and some of the juice comes out. So the shaila is, does that juice, now I must remember again, my intention is not to squeeze the grapes. I'm picking the grapes in order to go ahead and put them in the press where they're there, where they're then going to be pressed. So I'm not pressing it now by hand. I'm picking it and putting it in the press. But yet by picking it, I go ahead and cause some of the liquid to ooze out. So the shaila is, does that liquid have the ability to make the grapes ra'ui l'kabel tuma? So says the Gemara, habotzer legat, Shammai omer hochsher. Shammai says that liquid that comes out is machshir l'tuma, makes the grapes receptive to go ahead and become tamei. Hillel omer lo hochsher. And Hillel says, no, halacha l'maisa. Rabbi will say, Hillel's logic is very simple. Hillel's logic is, that's not your kavana. The only time that a liquid makes the food item roi lekabel tuma is when there's an element of kavana, but there's no kavana over here. Therefore, halacha lemaisa shouldn't make it mekabel tuma, shouldn't allow it to be mekabel tuma. Amar le Hillel Shammai. So we'll say, watch this interesting exchange. So Hillel says to Shammai, mipnei ma botzrin betara ve'in moskim betara. So we'll say, Hillel raises an interesting point to Shammai. He says, Shammai, why is it that by grapes you say that you have to be careful that there's no liquid, and therefore you have to be careful to go ahead and harvest the grapes betara, yet you don't hold the same standard by olives? So we're going to see this later on, but this is actually very interesting, that halacha lemaisa, Beis Shammai said that when you go ahead and you harvest grapes, you must use utensils which are ritually pure. Why? Because according to Shammai, once the juice oozes out of the grapes, which inevitably happens when you harvest them, the grapes themselves are ro'i l'kabel tuma, fit to become impure, and therefore if they're placed into impure utensils, they could contract impurity. Yet Hillel points out, Shammai, you only require that for grapes, yet you don't require that for olives. Why not? So Hillel's pointing out an inconsistency in Shammai's position. Amrale, supposed to listen to this. So Amrale, so Shammai says to Hillel, "In taknitani Gozrani Tuma Afala Masika. So Shammai says to Hillel, if you keep shepherding me, if you keep bothering me, I promise that I will make the same legislation on olives that I made by grapes. So an interesting, this is a good way to end the conversation. One more word. So, again, why, how we understand Shammai's response, what we're going to get to, we'll see. Someone says, so what happens? Na'atzu chera bebeis ha-medrash. So I said, this is wild. So they took a sermon, this whole machlokis, this is Hillel and Shammai, not Beis Hillel, not Beis Shammai, Hillel and Shammai themselves. So this is all unfolding in the Beis Medrash. So what do? They took a sword, they put it in the ground of the Beis Medrash. Now, Bosai, whenever they put a sword in the ground of the Beis Medrash, that means no one leaves. No one leaves. Amru, ha-nichnas ikon. Whoever wants to come in, could come in. Vayotzi al-yetze. But no one leaves. In other words, we are resolving this matter right now. So, Bosai, so first of all, also just an incredible idea. I think we've seen this muster a couple of times, how sometimes a person has to make a decision to reach resolution. You know, a lot of times we have complicated situations and we kind of kick the can down the road and don't want to actively deal with things as if somehow avoidance is going to take care of the problem itself. So therefore, again, what do these do in the Beis Medrash? When there was a problem, if it needs to get done, put the sword in the ground. Put the sword in the ground. No one leaves. You want to come in? Come in. But no one leaves until we resolve this. So what happens? So the Gemara says, "Va'osa hayom hayahilo kafuf v'yoshiv nifnei Shammai ke'echad min ha-tamidim." And I will say, on that day, Shammai had the numbers. Shammai had the numbers. So again, and Shammai, so ultimately, the halacha followed Shammai in a lot of these situations. Shammai ruled, and Hillel was subservient to Shammai. Literally, again, hayakafuf was bent over. V'yoshev lifnei Shammai, was sitting before Shammai ke'echa min ha-talmidim. So Hillel, again, who was the Nasi, who was the head of the Jewish people, became subservient ultimately to Shammai on that day. I will say, the Gemara says something amazing. V'hayakasha v'yisal kiyom shenasa bo'egel. And that day, when Hillel became subservient to Shammai, was as difficult as the day that Klal Yisrael built the eagle, built the golden calf. So it's a very strong statement. So what does that mean? Look at Rashi, Kasha, Lefi Shehillel Nasi Va'an Vasan. So it's actually interesting, beautiful tie-in also to Mesilas Yisharim, that Hillel was the Nasi, but he was very humble. So he recognized that Shammai was right. So he bent his knee to Shammai. The Gazer Shammai v'Hillel v'lo kiblu mina. So we'll say, listen to this. So what's the comparison here between this event and the Chita Egel? So we'll remember again, on almost basic level, what was the sin of the golden calf? It was an upsetting of authority. Moshe Rabbeinu was gone, and when he was gone, his authority was gone as well. And even though Aaron and Hur were there, the people simply chose not to respect them, and the whole authority framework was overturned. And when the authority framework is overturned, that's disastrous for Klal Yisrael. So the Gemara is comparing it that day, that ultimately it was such an upheaval for Klal Yisrael. Because Hillel was the leader, he was the Nasi. So when people saw, however, that Shammai was the ranking sage in the Beis Medrash, and Shammai's halacha was being upheld, and Hillel's position was not, it was like, it was overwhelming for Klal Yisrael. There was a total upsetting of the authority framework. Again, I want to be clear. This is not Chas V'Shalom saying that anyone did anything bad, Chas V'Shalom. There was no Aveira over here. The Gemara is comparing it to Chita Egel because, again, just to give you an idea as to how dramatic this episode was, just like Chita Egel, there was a total upset of the authority framework. On that day, when Shammai reigned supreme over Hillel, ultimately there was an upsetting of that authority framework as well. So the Gemara said, the Gazer Shammai v'Hillel v'lo kiblu minayhu. So Hillel and Shammai went ahead and instituted this halacha, but ultimately, again, Hillel yielded to Shammai, and therefore said that halacha l'maisa, when you harvest grapes, any juice that comes out of those grapes makes the grapes ra'ui lekabel tuma, fit to go ahead and become receptive to tuma. So that day, Hillel and Shammai legislated this, v'lo kiwa menayhu. But interestingly enough, the general populace did not accept this halacha. for whatever the reason, I don't know, it just wasn't accepted. It never took hold. Va'asu tamidaihu gazer v'kibo minaihu. But ultimately, again, then subsequently, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel come along, they institute it, and then again, it was accepted by the populace. So my timer. So Moses says, remember, now let's go back. So now we know what. Now we know what the takana was. So the takana was when you harvest grapes and juice oozes out of those grapes, even though again it's not your kavana to go ahead and have juice ooze out of the grapes. Nevertheless, that juice, that liquid, makes the grapes ra'ui lekabel tuma. Now why? So the Gemara says, "Gzeira Shema Yivtzerena Bekupas Tameo." So we'll say the Gemara says, because what's the concern here? The concern is that you may come to harvest the grapes in ritually impure baskets. Look at Rashi, Bekupos Tameo. It's about seven lines up from the bottom. Kupos Tameos the Asya Bitumasakli Umachshava Lamashke Lahachshir Hoyo. So we'll say the concern was as follows. Under normal circumstances, even if you would hold that, let's say the juice that oozes out of the grapes at the time that the grapes are picked does not make the grapes ro'i lekabel tuma, here's a halacha that everybody agrees with. If those grapes are wet and you put them into a utensil which is tame, that utensil makes the liquid chashuv, makes the liquid important, which then allows the grapes to become ra'i lekabel tuma. And since you're in a tame basket, ultimately they do in fact contract tuma. The mechanics of that, we're not going to get into now. Meaning why the basket does that, we're not going to get into now, but we're going to take it as a fact that it does. So therefore, again, the legislation was as follows. What we are concerned about is that halacha lemaisa, a person may come to go ahead and collect the grapes, harvested grapes, in a basket which is tame, and may therefore halacha lemaisa end up really being metame the grapes. So therefore, in order to go ahead and make sure that that does not happen, they were gozer that once any liquid comes out of the grapes, even though again it's not ledas, you didn't do it intentionally, nevertheless the grapes are mekabel tuma, and therefore a person would be careful not to harvest the grapes in a basket which is tame. So the Gemara says, "Hani chalman damar kli tame choshe mashkin shapir." So that makes sense if you hold that a ritually impure utensil has the ability to make the liquid on the grapes something chashev, something important. Therefore, the grapes are the kabel tuma, and the fact that they sit in a basket which is ritually impure makes the grapes tame. But according to the opinion that says that a kli, which is tame, does not have the ability to make the liquid which oozed out of the grapes or came out of the grapes unintentionally, doesn't have the ability to make that liquid chashuv, and therefore again the grapes cannot become tame with the basket, what is there to say? So the concern over here, according to Rabbi Hanina, was maybe you'll come to go ahead and collect the grapes in literally baskets which are coated with pitch. So what does that mean? Waterproof baskets. See, everyone agrees that if you go ahead and you collect the grapes with waterproof baskets, what does that show? That shows that you want the juice that oozes out of the grapes. The moment you want the juice that oozes out of the grapes is the moment that the juice itself becomes chasha, becomes important, and therefore does in fact have the ability to make the grapes ro'i lekabel tuma. So the Gemara says, Rava Amar, Gzeira Mishua Noshos. Rava says, the truth is the Gzeira ultimately again are because of the clusters that are stuck together. So we'll say, so the clusters that are always clustered are stuck together. So when you go in and you separate them, by definition, you're going to cause some of the grape juice to ooze out. That's being done actively through one's hands. Because that's being done actively through one's hands, therefore, halacha lemaisa, that liquid is considered to be wanted, is considered to be chashev, is considered to be important, and therefore it does make the grapes ro'i lekabel tuma. To which the Gemara says, the Amar Rav Nachman Amar Rav Baravua, Pamim Shadim Holik Lekarmo, Leida Im Ha'igiu Anavim Levitzira Olo. Sometimes a person will go into his vineyard to check if the grapes are ready to be harvested or not. Venoto Eshkol Anavim Masochto, he picks off a cluster of grapes from the tree to go ahead and squeeze them. And what ends up happening is when he picks off one cluster, it squeezes juice onto another cluster. And because that's being done by Adayim, because he's actively doing that with his hands, ubishas petzira Adayim mashke tofechalim. Sometimes even when you pick the second cluster, the liquid is still wet. But the idea I will say is that because he caused that juice to come out through his own actions, therefore halacha lemaisa, that liquid is considered to be chashiv and therefore makes the grapes roi lekabel tumah. So we'll say, so to kind of condense this, this enactment that we are referring to over here is a very simple one. What it says is that halacha lemaisa, when you pick grapes, when you're harvesting grapes, the halacha is the liquid that comes out of those grapes is considered to be chashav, is considered to be important. And therefore, even though your intention is not to squeeze the grapes, nevertheless, halacha lemaisa, any liquid which oozes out of those grapes makes the grapes ra'ui lekabel tuma. That's the enactment. Good. Shalom Yisrael. V'idach. We'll say, what's another enactment? So Amar Tavi Rishpa, Amar Shmuel. So we'll say, so Tavi, now Tavi Rishpa literally means Tavi the hunter. So Tavi the hunter, again, Rashi says, Pores Nishpin Latzot Chayevo. If he sets out traps to hunt animals and birds. Okay, so Tavi the hunter said as follows. So Tavi the hunter said as follows, Af Gidule Truma. So we'll say, this is really quite fascinating. Midoraisa. If you take Truma, and let's say, and you replant it, so once you replant it, it loses its identity as Truma. And anything which subsequently grows is actually Chulin, which is really quite fascinating. So let's say, see here this? So I'm not a Kohen. I go, or wherever I am, a coin, it doesn't really matter. I'm out of coin. I have truma. I replant the truma. I have grain that's truma. I replant the grain. The halacha is, and the new growth is no longer considered to be truma. So listen to this. So one of the enactments was the rabbi stepped in on this because you could see Rabbi said this could be so easily abused. So the rabbi stepped in and they said, Gidule truma, truma. The rabbi's paskin that halacha lemaisa. If you go ahead and replant truma, even the new growth is still considered to be truma. So the Gemara says, my time, why would the rabbis go through this? Am Rabbi Chanina, kazira mishum truma tahora biyad yisra. So we'll say, very simple. Rabbi Chanina says, because what could happen, Abbas? If you have a cheap yisra, right? If you have a Jew who does not want to give his truma to the Kohen. She has a great chapa. Yet again, I don't, you know, I'll say, the incredible thing is, no one ever wants to be a sinner, right? No one ever wants to be an avarion. I never want to be chasam balavera. But yet, I'm cheap. I don't want to give my truma to the Kohen. So how could I accomplish both? I don't want to be a sinner, but yet I don't really want to give away anything for my money. So it's very simple. So technically speaking, on a biblical level, replant the truma. And once you replant it, ultimately it becomes chulin. And once it's chulin, once it's unconsecrated, then by definition, it is yours. So says the Gemara, therefore the rabbis, in an effort to prevent this from occurring, said that halacha lemaisa, if you go ahead and you replant truma, midar abanon, the new growths are still considered to be truma. Amar Rav, Rav said, idich hashidi lahachi, Efrosh nami lo afishu. So the Gemara says, so it's like this, listen, if you're going to have a guy who does that, who doesn't want to give the truma to the Kohen and is going to replant it, so then bepashtos, he's not going to separate it to begin with. In other words, we'll say, if you're talking about someone who is already separating truma, that's already a maila, right? That's already a level. So to think that he's separating it, yet halacha lemaisa, he's not going to go ahead and he's going to go ahead and replant it. That seems a bit far off. So it says the Gemara, rather, what's the case? Allah Amar Rabbi Yisrael came on the Efshalami Avid Chita Achos Kid Shmuel, the Loka Avid, Hemuni Mehemni. And I will say, technically speaking, if you wanted to, you can go ahead and even just give one stalk of grain of truma to the Kohen, and technically speaking, you fulfilled your obligation. The fact that halacha lemaisa, the Yisrael is going to be already separating the truma, once he's separating it, Bipashtos, he's not going to replant it in order to escape the obligation of actually having to give it. So if that's the case, then why did the rabbis feel the need to legislate this? Alexera mishum truma tmeya biyad kohen. The possibility is that you are trying to avoid is a kohen holding on to truma tmeya. See, I will say, if a kohen has truma and that truma became tame, so the halach is he cannot eat it. He cannot eat it. So what are we concerned about? We're concerned that if one could go ahead and utilize this mechanism of replanting truma, and when you replant truma, it's no longer truma, right? But rather, again, it becomes total chulin. We're concerned that a kohen is going to have truma tameya. He's going to hold on to it because his intention is, let me just replant it. And if I replant it, it becomes tahor, it becomes chulin, which is a good chap. But we're concerned that he's going to hold on to it and come to inadvertently go ahead and consume it. We don't want a kohen holding on to truma tameya, because the longer he holds on to it, the greater the statistical probability that he will come to inadvertently consume it. Look at Rashi. Mishum truma tameya biyad kohen, Rashi says, shasura ba'achila, you can't eat it. Ubal v'zora, so the kohen has a great chap, so I'll just replant it. The gazer shetehe bishma harishon, v'arehi truma tameya dechashin and demamashile adzman zriya. So therefore, I will say ultimately again, we're concerned. So therefore, I will say this is really quite fascinating. So therefore, the next enactment we just read is that although midah araisa, if you take truma and you go ahead and you replant that truma, the halacha is the new growth is no longer truma. It's rather it is chulin. The rabbis stepped in and said, no, even though midaraisa, that's true, midrabanan, we are going to say that halacha lemaisa, that new growth is also called truma. So why is that? So bottom line, the Gemara says this because we're concerned that a kohen who has truma tameya in his possession will want to utilize this mechanism so as to allow for the consumption of the truma. He can't eat the truma tameya, so just replant it. Once he replants it, the new growth is going to be truma tahora and shalom ayisra. But even though that sounds like a good chap, we're concerned about that because any time that you maintain something in your home for a prolonged period of time, which is prohibited for consumption, chances are you're going to come to eat it. We don't want the kohen going ahead and maintaining any type of truma tameya in his home. Therefore, Chazal came along and said, even if you replant it, it still has the status of truma tameya. Good. Weiter. The idach. I will say, what's another enactment? So this is really quite interesting. Amar Bali Amar Avimi San Visa. So San Visa is apparently the name of his place. Rashi says Shem Makom, where he came from. So Bali is a person's name. Said in the name of Avimi from San Visa. Piton Ushmanan Viyenan Ubnosehen Kulan Miurchas. The prohibition to eat the bread, to eat the oil, the wine, or to marry the daughters of non-Jews are all part of the 18 enactments. So the Gemara says, Hani chalei Rabbi Meir. So we'll say this makes sense according to Rabbi Meir. El Rabbi Yossi. So we'll say before we get into this, we're just talking numbers now. So according to Rabbi Meir, that's fine. Remember again, Rabbi Meir counted the case of the bowls. The case of the bowls left underneath the receptacles left underneath the pipe of the mikvah yesterday's daf. He counted that as one of the cases. According to Rabbi Meir, this will be case number 18. El Rabbi Yossi shifts Rehavim, but according to Rabbi Yossi, who doesn't agree that the bowl case is one of the 18, by the time we get here, we're only left with 17 cases. To which the Gemara says, "Shis shifts Rehavim, ika hadrav acha bar ada." There is the other case of Rav Acha bar Ada. What's the case of Rav Acha bar Ada? The Rav Acha bar Ada, Am Rabbi Yitzchak, gazru al piton mishum shmanan. V'al shmanon mishum yenon, v'al piton mishum shmanon. So we'll say, so according to Rav Ada, in fact, these gezeres were broken up ultimately again into a couple of different gezeres. Namely, first the rabbi said, you can't go ahead and eat the bread of a non-Jew, lest you come to consume his oil. You can't consume his oil, lest you can come to consume his wine. And you can't consume their bread. I'm sorry. I read that out of order. Gazru apitam mishumshan. You can't eat their bread, lest you come to consume their oil. You can't eat their oil, lest you go ahead and come to consume you can't eat their oil lest you come to consume their wine. Va'al pitan mishum shmanan mai umei d'shemen mipas. So what does that mean? You can't go and eat their bread lest you come to eat the oil. Why is consumption of Gentile oil any worse than consumption of Gentile bread? Rather, the Gemara says, here's what Chazal did. El gazru pitan ushmanan mishum yenan. In reality, the gzeros of not eating, they always say, remember again, this is pasakum. You can't eat bread baked by a non-Jew, even if halacha lamaisa, the bread is ingredient-wise kosher. So let's say your non-Jewish neighbor bakes you a loaf of bread, and they show you ultimately, again, all of the ingredients. It's all fine, all ingredient-wise kosher. You still can't eat it. You're still not allowed to eat that. So the Gemara now says as follows. So the rabbis legislated regarding bread and oil. You also can't consume the oil of a non-Jew, even though, again, oil is nothing. Again, oil wouldn't even necessarily have ingredient-wise anything even possibly wrong. But nevertheless, you can't consume it. Why? Mishum yenon. Both of these gzeros were made lest you come to drink the wine of a non-Jew. Now, I will say, remember, the wine of a non-Jew, so we've seen that before, that has to do with what? That has to do, halacha lemaisa, with a concern regarding yayin nesach, with a concern ultimately regarding avodah zarah. Va'al yenon mishum b'noseihen. And ultimately, again, they legislated ultimately not drinking the wine of a Gentile, lest you come to go ahead and marry their daughters. So as I said, the idea is all of these gzeros were really created. We'll see. All these gzeros were really created as a form to create a hurdle to intermarriage. The idea is to separate Jews and Gentiles socially as much as possible, in order that ultimately intermarriage, chas v'shalom, does not occur. So therefore, again, the way the Gemara is understanding it over here is that halacha l'maisa, the first step of legislation was, they said you can't eat the bread or the oil of a Gentile lest you come to drink their wine. And interestingly enough, in this iteration of the halacha, they legislated about wine not as much for avodah zarah purposes, but more for socialization purposes. Wine is a drink around which much socialization occurs. The rabbi said you can't drink the wine of a Gentile lest you chas v'shalom come to marry their daughters. Va'al b'noseihen mishum davar acher, va'al davar acher mishum davar acher. And they legislated regarding their daughters because of something else, and on something else because of something else. Very helpful. Okay, so I'll say, so again, we'll see what the something else's are in just a moment as well. So the Gemara says, my davar acher, what does that mean, davar acher? Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, gazru al tinok nochri, shem b'tami b'ziva. So we'll say another enactment that Chazal made is that they said that a non-Jewish baby has the status of a zav. Has the status of a zav, right? You're supposed to remember again, for those of you who were with us in the last cycle by Nida, we saw all of these halachas in Meseches Nida, that the rabbis enacted, or the rabbis imposed a zav status on a Gentile baby from the beginning. Shematai b'ziva. Why? Why do they do that? Shelo yehei tinok Yisrael ragel eslo b'mishkav zachar. Because we'll say, again, all of this was enacted in order to create a distance between Jew and Gentile. Here the concern was that we didn't want our children to be fraternizing with non-Jewish children out of a concern, ultimately, again, of Mishkav Zachar, of homosexuality, of homosexual activity. Now, I just want to point out, whenever you see takanas like this, these takanas are reactive. So what Chazal are ultimately seeing are dangers that are occurring and reacting in that way. So therefore, what you see over here are multiple gezeiros, right? So there are gezeiros ultimately to prevent intermarriage. There are gezeiros, chas v'shalom, to prevent Mishkav Zachar. So the Gemara says, one second, now we have a problem. So we'll say, if that's the case, according to Rabbi Meir now, there are not 18 enactments, but rather there are 19 enactments. We now have one too many, to which the Gemara says, no, it's not a problem. According to Rabbi Meir, interestingly enough, the two enactments that we saw before, namely namely the concept of food or utensils becoming tame through contact with tame liquids. He collapses those two cases into one, therefore, again, preserving the number of 18 enactments. Rabosai, as we conclude this sugya, ultimately, again, we see, here, let's start with what everybody agrees with. Everyone agrees that there are 18 enactments. That's what everyone agrees with. The point of contention is what constitutes that number 18, right? What goes into that number? That seems to be a source of machlokes. Rabosai, but what you begin to see is something so beautiful, is how incredibly precious our system of Yiddishkeit is. And Chazal understood how, without proper preservation, without proper boundaries and gedarim, fences around it, the system itself could become so easily eroded and could lose so much of its purity and holiness. So again, remember, we're studying these additional layers and additional levels of halacha, and you can't do this lest you come to this. Sometimes it seems to us to kind of be a bit convoluted and maybe even a bit too much. But also, but Chazal in their incredible wisdom understood, you know, also you have to understand something. The reason we have Yiddishkeit today, and again, the Yiddishkeit today is the same halachas as we had 1,000 years ago, and even longer than that, is because the rabbis of the generations have done what they can to go and preserve the system. So these yudches takanos that we've seen, you have to have akaras hatov to all of those incredible tzaddikim who gathered in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkiya ben Garon. Because of those 18 enactments, so much of the beauty of Yiddishkeit they were able to take in, we have today mamish because of them. All right, Rabosai. So we'll stop over here. Actually, let's do one line and then we'll stop. So we'll say, so now this Mishnah actually is very exciting, because now we're going to begin to get into a lot of Hilchos Shabbos, which is really quite fascinating. So the Mishnah says as follows, Beishame Omer. Actually, we'll stop over here for today. We're going to pick up Emir Hashem with the Mishnah tomorrow, and we'll begin davening Emir Hashem in just a few moments. Shkoyach.